Good afternoon. We're going to open the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. Today is Monday, March 28th, 2005. I'm Representative Greg Smith. We have Monica Brown, our LFO analyst, with us, and we have Cap Bell, our Subcommittee assistant. Today we're going to do a public hearing on House Bill 5065, the Real Estate Agency. We're going to start off with an agency overview, go into performance measures, do priorities and potential reductions, and then if we do have any public testimony, we'll go into that. So why don't we begin by having you folks come on up. Howdy. Why don't you introduce yourself for the record there?
For the record, my name is Scott Taylor. I'm the Oregon Real Estate Commissioner. And I'd like to wish you all good afternoon. Representative Smith, I understand one of my board members has been working with you and doing some property. Congratulations.
Yes.
This afternoon, I'll provide an overview of the agency's missions, our goals and historical perspective, our programs and target groups, our performance measures and outcomes, our priorities, budget issues, and efforts to contain costs and the bills we're monitoring. Our overall message is that we believe professionalism has been elevated and consumers are protected. The number of licensees is up, but administrative actions are down. The budget is a hold-the-line budget. We expect stability in revenue, expenditures, and workload for the biennium, and we will continue to fulfill our mission through current programs and activities. The mission of the agency is to provide quality protection for Oregon consumers of real estate, escrow, and land development services, balanced with a professional environment conducive to a healthy real estate market. The agency has a long history of protecting Oregon's consumers and innovation and improving the professionalism of licensees. Oregon was the first state in the nation to license real estate professionals. The Oregon Real Estate Department was created in 1919. The agency published its first real estate manual in 1931. In 1951, an educational fund was established to improve professionalism, and client trust account laws were established. Housing discrimination laws were added to real estate laws in 1959. In 1971, Oregon became the first state in the nation to require continuing education for license renewal, and pre-license education was added in 1973. In 1993, agency disclosure and property condition disclosure disclaimer laws were added. And in 2001, license laws were significantly modified to elevate professionalism. The salesperson category of license was changed to broker with additional requirements for education as well as office policies. We deliver our services through the Office of the Real Estate Commissioner, which provides overall policy direction for the agency and houses administrative hearings and land development activities, and the Real Estate Board, which is an advisory board for the Commissioner and the Governor. The Education and Research section, which develops pre-licensing curriculum requirements, approves public and private schools, instructors and courses, oversees exam administration, produces educational publications, including the Oregon Real Estate News Journal with a circulation of about 24,000. The section also develops video cassettes and online courses and conducts research. The licensing section, which is responsible for licensing real estate professionals and provides reception and information services to the public. Administrative services manages administrative services for the agency, such as budgeting, accounting, and personnel. The information services section, which provides data processing, land, local area network administration, and telecommunications services for the agency, and the Regulation Division, which investigates complaints, conducts background checks of licensed applicants, reviews and audits escrow bonding and securities on deposit, and conducts compliance reviews both in the field and random mail-in reviews of client trust accounts. The agency's customers are diverse and include the general real estate, general public, license applications, licensees and registrants, real estate schools, developers, attorneys, and professional and governmental organizations. Regarding performance measures, the agency has four. Number one is the ratio of audits completed per biennium to the number of offices. The target was 250 of 4,377 offices, and the target in 2004 was exceeded with 282 offices audited. Additionally, the agency began a process of mail-in audits in 2003, and the modified measure is included in the 2005-07 budget. Number two is collaboratively complete new legislative concepts and administrative rules each biennium. Target was to complete collaboration on or by May 2004, and the target was exceeded by completing the goal by March 2004. Number three is the average number of days to close a formal complaint. The target was 130 days, and the actual for 2004 was 178. The goal of this measure is to provide excellent customer service. A strategy for achieving the goal is to respond quickly to consumer complaints, and a measure for achieving the goal is the average number of days to close a formal complaint. There are several reasons we haven't achieved the goal. The primary reason is the number is a simple count of average of the total days to close a case from the date a file is open to the date all action is completed and the file is closed. That includes the time elapsed, which is outside the agency's control, such as contested case hearings and referral to the hearings officer panel, appeal to the courts, etc. Therefore, we requested a modification of the measure as part of our 2005-07 budget. From the average number of days to close a complaint to the average number of days to complete the investigation file processing, which we believe will be more accurate. The modification, which was approved by the Oregon Progress Board, is a more accurate measure of the time the agency takes to complete the complaint procedures it controls by tracking the agency processing time exclusively. We've also made extensive efforts to manage the timely processing of complaints. In 2003-05, the agency developed a regulation division handbook containing uniform investigative procedures, provided training for all investigative staff, cross-trained investigative staff in specialty areas, assigned a person to manage evaluation and assignment of incoming complaints, and reviewed workload reporting procedures. In addition, the agency's upgraded database management system will have enhanced case file management capabilities, which will aid in workload measurement and assignment. In short, we recognize the need to improve the outcome. The governor's recommended budget includes a modification we hope you will approve to help us achieve the goal, and we're making extensive efforts to ensure a fair and timely investigative process. Number four, the percentage of license and examination survey respondents who rate the agency positively. The target was 97%, and the actuals in 2004 were 96%. While we recognize the actual percentage was 1% less than the goal for the current fiscal year and will strive for the 97% target, we note that it's an increase of 1% from the previous fiscal year, up from 95%, which is an accomplishment given workload and implementation of complex changes to rules, laws, systems, and procedures. We also note that of all the agencies reporting customer satisfaction to the Oregon Progress Board, the average was 83%, and that at 96%, we exceed that average. I'd like to take a minute to talk about other agency achievements. We believe our regulatory and preventive activities are beneficial. Although the number of licensees increased in the past decade from 22,374 in January of 1996 to to 20,821 in January 2005, the number of administrative actions decreased from 150 in 1995 to 114 in 2004. We've engaged in extensive educational and preventive activities. In the past decade, the agency distributed an estimated 800,000 Oregon real estate news journals, countless brochures, Oregon real estate manuals, developed videos and online courses, and issued hundreds of online education certificates, conducted hundreds of updates, seminars, and presentations throughout the state, and won 3 national awards for education and newsletters. In the past 10 years, the agency investigator auditors have gone into the field and conducted over 1,500 compliance audits of real estate offices. The agency also successfully initiated a random audit of client trust account records. One of the agency's most important preventive activities and customer services is the Regulation Division Intake Telephone, which is staffed full-time on a rotating basis by investigator auditors to respond to calls from the public. The projection of the calls in 2003 is 91,000 calls for the decade. When the agency engages in administrative actions, it assures a fair process, demonstrated by the fact that administrative actions are rarely appealed. And in the last 8 years, appellate courts have upheld all but 2 of the agency's actions. An agency consumer committee worked on educational and preventive activities, and among other improvements, a licensee database and buyer advisory were added to the agency's website. Regarding our prioritized list, as a small agency, our programs are relational and prioritizing is difficult. But our prioritized...
We have a question, Representative Richardson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Taylor, you had mentioned about changes that have been taking place on your website. What changes have taken place as far as streamlining the registration and relicensing process?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Richardson, we are in the process at this point, and I think I'll elaborate on that in a minute, of doing some upgrading to our relational database that I mentioned that ultimately will allow us to do online licensing.
Please. Have you a date when you expect to be able to start doing online relicensing?
Excuse me. Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, I'm told that September of this year.
I'm following.
Please.
Right now, it'll be more labor-intensive to do it the way it's been done in the past than it will be once we're doing it with the Internet. So how will this affect your biennial budget since you'll look at your staffing requirements and you'll have less staffing requirements if you can go online for relicensing than if you're doing it by hand?
Can I answer that? Yeah.
Representative Richardson, Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, my name is Betty Reynolds. I'm Deputy Commissioner. We're on target to complete an IT upgrades policy package, which was approved as part of the 2003-05 budget. We hope to have that implemented by September 2005. We anticipate that about, I think the estimate is about a quarter of the licensees will take advantage of online renewals, but we anticipate that there won't be a corresponding decrease in staffing requirements because we'll be able to use staff for other priority workload, to meet other workload. So we haven't built in a reduction in staff. What we do hope is that it's a better service to licensees.
Just follow up, Ms. Chair. Betty, certainly it will be, you know, because it'll be easier for them to license on computers. But when you have roughly 20,000 licensees, may I just ask how many staff members do you have presently involved in licensing by hand?
We do, Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, we do have a relational database management system. So a good deal of the process is currently automated. There are 5 FTE that are devoted to the licensing process.
One last question, I guess, you know, where it's going is with efficiency, hopefully there will be a savings. And certainly efficiencies are great for the people that are utilizing those efficiencies, but there should also be some type of a savings from the efficiency in the administration. So we just would be interested in not having tasks fill the time, but if there is actual efficiencies, what will the other additional people be doing? If you're saving 25, if you can do 20% online and you have five people doing it, then you've got an extra FTE. Theoretically, if they all came on at once, I know it's a transitionary period, but we would just hope that you'd be able to come back and explain how the efficiency is helping to save money for the agency.
Please continue.
Regarding our prioritized list, as a small agency, our programs, our relational and prioritizing is difficult, but our prioritized list of programs are, number one, licensing, number two, regulation, number three, education, and number four, land development. Likewise, any reductions would be felt across the board might have an unwanted effect of increasing complaint activity and reducing productivity. But our 10% reductions include ceasing some publications, reducing postage, reducing hardware and software maintenance, and reducing Attorney General expenditures. Regarding budget drivers and environmental factors, the agency's budget and full-time equivalents have remained relatively stable in the past 10 years. Major changes have included changes in continuing education requirements, major office automation and establishment of a relational database management system, and work toward computer-based exams and information technology upgrades in the current biennium. The agency...
Really quick, and I don't mean to disrupt you, but under your fines and forfeitures, do we have a policy where we recover the cost in the event that a fine is implemented?
Mr. Chair, under our statutory scheme, the fine goes to the general fund. So actually, we help you out when we do that, and we do have no cost recovery provision in there.
Am I missing something? When I look at for the biennium fine and forfeitures other fund, I see $164,000. Mm-hmm. Is that the amount of fines that we've levied against someone, some entity?
I'm not sure I'm understanding your question, Mr. Chair.
I'm looking at your budget. I'm looking at the beginning balance, and then I'm going to revenue categories, and I see a category called fine, rents, and royalties.
Okay.
And under that, I see fines and forfeitures of $164,000.
Mr. Chairman, that would be a projection.
Okay. No, let me rephrase my question. Then in 2003-05, then this agency fined or took in through forfeiture $165,000 worth of asset. Is that correct?
Well, that's there. Mr. Chair, the 165,215 that you're looking at is the legislatively adopted budget. So the spreadsheet that you're working on for the benefit of the rest of this subcommittee is one of the orbits, which is the budget system reports in the back of the binder. And the first column is the 2103 actuals. So if you're looking on fines and forfeitures, they collect $150,815 in fines and forfeitures.
The question I'm going to have prior to going to work group is, what do you as an agency spend to collect $150,000? What do you spend in pursuit of trying to build a case so you can assess those fees?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Rita Rush. I do the accounting and budgeting for the agency. The worksheet that you're looking at, the $164,000 is a total. The actual general fund revenue for our civil penalties is projected to be $100,568. And we have no costs that we recover. We have an individual that works with the collection agencies to collect those fines, but we don't have any costs in there to recover. It's whatever we collect is turned over to the general fund.
What do you expend in your effort to... Obviously, there's a process that you folks go through to get to a finish line where you're levying a fine.
In our actual process of establishing those civil penalties, is that what you're looking for, how we come to that number, or what happens after that number is established and we've...
I'm a realtor, and I'm accused of doing something wrong.
Okay.
You spend money to find out whether or not I've done something wrong or not. And if I did, I assume then there's a process where you find me.
So he's done.
What do we spend to find out if I did something wrong?
Mr. Chairman, we don't have that figure broken out. I can tell you the process, and maybe that will help you understand it a little bit. There's really only a couple places where we're able to levy a civil fine. The first area is as it relates to escrow companies. And generally, if we find a violation of our statute with an escrow company, it's as a result of an investigation, a negotiation with the escrow company over what the investigation produced. We propose a fine. They either agree with us, disagree with us, or whatever.
Fine that you propose, is there statutory limitation on what you can... Are you able to propose amount to at least cover your AG cost?
Mr. Chairman, no, we are not. There is a statutory amount in there, as I recall, but that all accrues to the general fund. It does not accrue to the agency. Our costs for that are built into our regulations division budget. The other area that we may be involved in levying a civil fine is if somebody is acting without a license and performing professional real estate activities, we have the ability there, and the same, there's a statutory minimum and maximum, plus if they've profited, we do have the ability to collect that. But again, the costs of actually pursuing that are built into our regulations division budget.
And I don't mean to slow up the committee. I just have one more question, then I'll move on. In 2003-05, your AG expense was $252,000.
Mm-hmm.
What other functions does the AG provide for you in addition to trying to go down the process of...
Okay, Mr. Chair, it's a number of things. General counsel, for one thing. In terms of evaluating contracts that we may be letting or that kind of a thing, they do that. I'm sure I'll miss something here, but I'll try to give you the flavor. We work with them in terms of cases that may be going before a hearing officer or may be trying to settle of a disciplinary nature. Any personnel matters that we may have that are going beyond an internal situation, those are the ones that come to mind immediately.
Okay, thank you.
We believe the changes that we have made have improved productivity, compliance, and service delivery. The most significant change in the past decade was Senate Bill 446, which was enacted during the 2001 session. And that made major changes to Oregon's real estate license laws, including elimination of the salesperson category of license, increased education and experience requirements, elimination of competency exams, and the requirement that real estate firms adopt policies delineating the responsibilities of the practitioners within the firm. Agency disclosure requirements were also updated and simplified. Overall, the agency completely revised its administrative rules and streamlined procedures to make them more reasonable to business, while at the same time protecting Oregon's real estate consumers. The intent of the changes was to elevate the professionalism of licensees, and we believe it has succeeded. The number of licensees has increased since implementation of the bill, but the number of administrative actions has decreased. In the decade between 1992 and 2002, the number of licensees followed a bell-shaped curve from a high of 22,386 in 1995 to a low of 19,047 in 2002. Numbers have increased slightly but remained relatively steady since 2003 at approximately 20,000. As of January 2005, there are 20,821 licensees. In the past, decreases in the...
Yeah. Sandra Johnson.
I'm sorry, would you repeat that? I just simply didn't hear you. Number of licensees.
Sure. The numbers have increased slightly and remained relatively steady since 2003 at approximately 20,000. As of January 2005, there were 20,821 licensees.
Okay.
Sorry, you didn't hear me. In the past, decreases in the number of licensees tended to follow a cycle in the economy. But the 2003-2005 biennium was associated with a very healthy real estate market. Contributing to the market have been historically low mortgage interest rates. The agency's 2005-2007 budget is based on stability in the number of licensees and in the industry. Changes in any one of a number of factors in the industry environment could have a significant impact on the number of licensees and the agency budget. The additional education required by Senate Bill 446 must be completed by June 30 of this year, or the license is canceled. At the end of February 2004, the number, I think that should be 2005, the number who had not completed the requirements was 3,653 of 20,821 total licensees, or about 18%.
Really quick, we have a question. Representative Richardson.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Taylor, this might actually be for Ms. Rush. It's relating to the amount of fines and forfeitures, because she's mentioned that it's down around $100,000. But my question is, in two different places I'm seeing a number for the 05-07 governor's recommended budget of $164,000. And the most recent one I'm looking on is at the very end of, it's on the final tab of the book under special reports. I'm looking at the budget support detail revenue expenditures, and it's page 1 of 6. And it shows me revenue categories, and then toward the bottom of the page it says fines and forfeitures, and then it says other funds limited, general funds revenue, and then all funds, and it shows for the governor's recommended budget for 0507, $164,348. So I'm just wondering, you had mentioned a figure of a little over $100,000, and I didn't understand the difference.
Yes, sir, Representative Richardson. I was looking at, there's two different numbers that add up to that $164,000 there.
Mm-hmm.
The $63,780, those are actually late fees that we collect from people. And then the civil penalties is a separate line item of $100,568, and that's the one that goes directly to the general fund.
Okay, and the late fees go where?
The late fees are our revenue for the agency.
And do they are they reflected then in the budget as revenue?
Yes, they are. Yes, sir.
And the $100,000 goes to the general fund?
Correct.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Another potential adverse effector is an increase in interest rates, which could reduce the number of licensees. If you've been following the news lately, you'll note that those rates have edged up slightly. We don't find that to be a major concern at this point because rates are at a historical low. Some concern has been expressed concerning the long period of a strong residential real estate market that has created a bubble that could burst. Many licensees are approaching retirement age. The industry is more technologically complex and competitive, which has affected individuals' decisions whether to remain in the profession. The increasing use of the Internet has also impacted the real estate industry. Buyers are better informed and have higher expectations of real estate professionals and are more likely to complain to regulatory agencies and enter into litigation. The agency is small and cost conscious. We continuously look for ways to contain costs and streamline our activities. For example, we're housed in a small DAS-owned space. We consolidate travel...
This one, please. Senator Johnson.
Thank you. How much do you pay for that modest DAS space?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, it's just over $15,000 a month.
And where is it?
Senator Johnson, it's located at the corner of 12th and Center, directly across from the Safeway store, if you're familiar with that.
I am. Chair, are any other agencies housed there?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, no.
And you have 40, how many employees?
It's 30.
30 employees. Okay, thank you.
I think there's a decimal point in there, too.
And just as a clarification, I assume that that's on the standard basic rate of rent. I think it's $1.40 a foot for standard basic office footage.
Representative Richardson, that's correct.
Okay. Please continue.
We've strengthened operating procedures related to vehicle use and compensatory time use. We monitor change of address notification and reduce postage costs. We've complied with the DAS administrative restrictions and regulatory streamlining initiatives. In migrating from once-a-month paper and pencil exams to a computer-based exam offered in 6 representative locations throughout the state, ranging from 1 to 4 days a week, including evenings and Saturdays. So that's a significant change. We're upgrading our computer system to permit online transactions, beginning with renewals. Our cost containment efforts have resulted in capacity building, permitting the agency to do more with less, and focus on missing critical activities. The agency uses professional services when the expertise is unavailable within our existing staff resources and when it's cost-effective to do so. Primary professional services include the upgrade and maintenance of our relational database management system, examination services, and the Oregon State Police for background check services. We leverage our public purchasing capabilities whenever possible.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Thank you. I just want to put a little finer point on this. For your security services, you're buying services from the state police, fingerprinting services, and background checks.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, that's correct.
So you're not doing any of that yourselves?
Senator Johnson, the only thing we do is basically move the paperwork to them.
Thank you.
Just kind of continue on that. You have under the 0305 estimates for professional services an expenditure of $395,000, but that same line for the next biennium is only $92,700. And so what has changed that would make almost a $300,000 difference?
Representative Richardson, I'll ask. I think Betty can comment on that the best. There's a pretty good reason for it.
Representative Richardson, the reduction is related to a one-time phase-out of a policy option package where we're upgrading our information technology services. That's the primary reason for the reduction.
Okay, and so it shifted into an IT column, or just was a one-time?
It's a one-time expense that was phased out.
Okay. All right, so it was part of the IT implementation that cost some money, and that's where that was. And now you're back down to where it would have been fairly normally. Although in the 0103, I noticed it was $294,000. So is this a two-biennium phase-in?
Representative Richardson, there was some related professional services related to information technology for a different project.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Representative Richardson, if I may, I did want to supplement Scott's response to a question regarding background checks. The agency does do criminal background checks of applicants, but the routine background checks and fingerprinting services are either done by local law enforcement or fingerprinting services are available through Oregon State Police, but it's Oregon State Police to whom we refer the majority of applications to do routine LEDS checks.
Okay. Thank you. Please continue, Mr. Scott.
We leverage our public purchasing capabilities wherever possible. For example, we're entering into a purchase order agreement with a vendor which has a service agreement with the state to upgrade the relational database management system. The service agreement includes a free software license. Overall, we expect relative stability in our revenue, workload, and expenditures for the biennium, and we'll continue our efforts to achieve our mission through a continuation of current programs, activities, staffing level, and fees. We'll continue educational, preventive, and regulatory activities to protect consumers and maintain a healthy market. Continue administration of laws and rules to increase the professionalism of licensees. Leverage the use of enhanced information systems to maximize access, service, and productivity, and stabilize computer-based examination services. The real estate agency is totally self-supported through other fund revenues derived from licensing, registration, examinations, publications, seminars, and other services. The fee structure will remain the same in 2005-07 as it is in the current biennium, and we expect stability in the number of licensees and consequently in our revenue stream. Again, the agency's budget is stable. The 2005-07 expenditures are less than the 2003-05 biennium. There are no policy packages, and essential packages are technical and across the board. For example, non-PIX items, phase out of one-time cost for policy packages, inflation and price list adjustments, and technical adjustments. Three 2003-05 budget notes addressed losses from property manager client trust accounts. The first directed the agency to consider adopting administrative rules prohibiting licensees from using debit cards issued by financial institutions on client trust accounts. The agency adopted two administrative rules which prohibit property managers from utilizing any form of debit card issued by financial institution on client trust accounts. The second budget note directed the agency to conduct periodic mail-in audits on a random significant sample of licensee client trust accounts. We implemented the random audit of such records. The third budget note directed the agency to form a task force to analyze long-term solutions such as a recovery fund, an alternative state bond program, overdraft notification, and other solutions. A representative advisory group met on several occasions, and their activities resulted in a legislative concept and policy package requiring property manager licensees to obtain bonds and established a real estate recovery fund. The concept and package are not included in the governor's recommended budget. In the governor's recommended budget, the agency projected...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Senator Morris.
A question, if I may. Could you comment on the outcomes of the budget notes and with respect to the property trust accounts, kind of the status of where that issue is, and then a question of the work group, advisory group, the statement, the concept and package are not included in the governor's budget, as to why that might be.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, I recall you were here last session when this discussion took place. I'll give you a snapshot as best I can of what's happened in the interim. What we have been doing regarding those random audits that I mentioned just a minute ago is we've been doing, I think it's 100 per quarter, where we send out a request for a licensee to send us their, I'm doing this from memory, so I hope I'm correct on the exactness of it, verify what their accounts are would be the first thing. Second is show us, I think it's the last two reconciliations. And as far as I know, those were the two things that we attempted to do. What we have found is that there were a lot of trust accounts out there that either had not been registered with us or no longer exist, and so through this process, that is becoming updated. We have found some areas where the reconciliations either hadn't been done or there were problems with them or whatever, and in those instances, we've opened investigative files and pursued those investigations. What I think I can say that hopefully can give you some comfort is that, to my recollection, during the biennium, I'm not aware of a case where a consumer has suffered a loss as a result of this issue that we had last time that has not been reimbursed. So for me, that's a good thing. As to the governor's reasons for not forwarding that, I can't speak to it personally.
Senator Morse, a primary reason for not including this legislative, not moving this legislative concept forward was that...
Valentina, would you please state your name again?
I'm sorry. Valentina Fomenko, Budget and Management Division, Department of Administrative Services. The primary reason was that there seemed to be a lack of agreement between the agency and the industry representatives, even though the agency did put together a work group and made an effort to work together with the industry. However, there seemed to be a lack of agreement on what needed to be done at the very end of it. Another reason was that the proposed solution would increase fees for licensees entering the profession, and that's something that had a problem with.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Carter.
Since you've taken a stop. Can you tell me why your Attorney General fees are so high, almost $500,000?
Isn't that the number given?
I can tell you this. One case was 252. 252,005. One was 55,250. Another one was 136,202, and then the lowest one was 2,408. Is that unusual in your history of being at the agency?
Senator Carter, if you're looking at the summary of expenditures, you're looking at where it says 2001, 2003 actuals. Is that where you're? Were you referring?
I just was looking through the back part of the budget and looking at the different accounts of Attorney General costs to you.
And what we have in here reported is actuals and then budget.
Oh.
And then some estimates, so that it's not per year or per biennium fluctuations. We actually have actual expenditures and then the budget expenditures.
So how much did you spend last year in the last session?
403,
yes,
405, the estimates that I had provided at the beginning of the budget cycle was $123,000 at that time.
And it came out being how
much? I don't have the to-date information here with me.
Because I'm just trying biennium. To see if Attorney General costs are going up or what's the case, because when I looked at it's under revenues and disbursements. When I look underneath there and I see those kind of costs, that's $500,000 in costs. I'm thinking that's pretty high, isn't it?
We don't have, I'm not sure where you're looking. We don't have,
right.
The highest we had, 103, was $136,202 was
okay.
Actual expenditures.
Got that one. Uh-huh.
And then my estimate for 0305 was $123,000. So what we had estimated as an expenditure limitation for this 0507 was
$202,000. Okay. I'm good. I was just thinking that was pretty high. I was just wondering, Monica, I don't know where you can check that out.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Richardson.
Senator Carter, you think that's high? Toward the in the very back where we have the breakdowns, I'm looking at page 3 of 6,
mm-hmm.
and it talks about PERS employees' retirement costs and PERS bond contribution. We have 30 positions the total payments for the next biennium is $650,000, which comes out for the biennium at $21,700 per employee, just for the retirement cost.
Oh, I'm sorry, it's Senator Johnson.
Thank you, and as long as we're sort of focusing on high AG, high public employee retirement, I'm thumbing through the back and looking at the high manager to line ratio and trying to figure out why a 30-person agency needs, by my count, six managers, some at principal executive F and G level. That's an awful lot of managers for a little tiny agency.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I'm the G, by the way. When I came to the agency, we actually had a higher management to staff ratio. My recollection, for about the same size of an agency, is we had about 11. We've attempted to reduce that and are still looking at reducing it. I may ask Betty Reynolds to be a little more specific in terms of some of what we're attempting to do right now. Our managers are working managers. They're not folks that have two or three levels between them. The other is...
At least in my worldview, I expect managers to be working managers.
Some of them that are classified as managers might be better classified in under other positions. And we're searching for ways to do that.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
How long have you been searching? And how? I mean, it seems like, how long have you been at the agency?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, it'll be 10 years in August.
Okay, well, it seems that you're moving in the right direction, but I still think that it is completely unacceptable to have this level of managers in a very modest number of employee agency.
May I?
Please.
Mr. Chair. Senator Johnson, the agency has been working with the Department of Administrative Services. They have an administrative job classification study that's pending where a number of these administrative classifications would be abolished. We have been working with them and have reviewed alternative classifications which are slated to be abolished. We're looking at alternative classifications that are more appropriate for the types of managers that we have. And by working managers, we mean the full range. In a small agency, they do the full range of policy and management supervision through others, as well as hands-on, get the job done, roll up your shirt sleeves and pull up.
And so then what salary range are you looking at for those, or what classification range?
Our hope is that it be across the board, but it would reduce the number of managers. It would be a reflection of the full range of complex responsibilities that they have, but it wouldn't necessarily be part of that principal executive manager series.
Mr. Chair, one more.
Sure.
A theme that I think you may hear emerging from some of these hearings is an interest on the part of some of us for how actively engaged. Do you have an advisory board?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, yes, we do.
How actively engaged are they? How often do they review your budget? How often do they review your management structure?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, our advisory board's statutory scope is very limited. And though I make a report to them on those issues when we meet, which is every other month, it's really not a part of their statutory scope.
To review the financials of the agency is not part of their statutory scope?
That's correct.
Have you ever thought about offering legislation that would beef up the... I mean, it seems to me that a board that isn't reviewing the financials of the agency that they direct is missing a pretty big piece of board responsibility. Maybe I'm wrong.
Mr. Chair, Representative Senator Johnson, frankly, I haven't given it much thought. It's been that way as long as I can remember now. That doesn't mean it's right or wrong or indifferent. It is very unusual the way ours works compared to many licensing boards, and I don't know the history as to how it came to be. their scope really is in an advisory capacity. Their primary responsibilities are twofold. One, as relates to the examination process, they approve how we do that. They approve the exam questions, those issues. And the other is granting waivers of time requirements for individuals to achieve certain levels of licensing. Those are the only two real duties that they have under our statute.
Help me here. Do you have a follow-up?
No, not right now.
Help me here. Can you... new chair to this budget, can you give me a little 101 on how the real estate agency came into being?
Mr. Chair, I'll try. It's 86 years ago and I wasn't born, but I think I have a pretty good idea. From my understanding of it, the original issue that the people at the time when they proposed the legislation that created the real estate agency were trying to avoid was a practice known as curbstoning. And that was, or fly-by-night might be a better way of putting it, too. You had somebody that purported to be a real estate broker, for example, and you didn't know where they were. You didn't know how to work with them. They had no guidelines as to how they did operate, and that the industry itself actually proposed the legislation that created what is now the real estate agency. Does that give you a feel?
It does. The Oregon Medical Association, the Oregon Dental Association, the State Bar, they're all self-regulating. Have you folks ever looked at taking this from a state agency and making it a self-regulated association?
Mr. Chair, that would be unprecedented in the United States. I can tell you that in Canada, there are, I believe, three provinces that do just that. What they have done there, just to give you a feel for it, Alberta, I think, is the best example of it because I think they were the first one to do it. There's a statute there that creates what they call the Alberta Real Estate Council. And that council has a makeup, and that council actually is the policy-setting body that controls how the administrative body operates. And they operate, they enforce the statute, but it's totally outside the provincial government.
Thank you. Why don't we keep moving forward?
Can I just ask one question?
Sure.
I was just thinking that even though it's, well, just a little conversation with you, Mr. Chair, and other members, actually, even though it's a 30-person office, but when you think in terms of the kind of turnovers, the kind of people that are constantly moving about, going in, going out of real estate, how their workload has to be tremendous in terms of the background kind of work they have to do, along with managing all the people. How many agents you'd say you have across the state?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carter, this is an approximation. I think you're asking how many offices there are. About 4,500.
Yeah, and so... so you're not just managing your little core office. You're having to see about the work of the state, right?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, that's correct.
So you, even though this might seem, and Senator Johnson, you're just talking about the question on ratio, that it sounds like they're not just doing, Mr. Chair, the kind of thing where they're in office and they just manage these 30 people. They got to manage a statewide system. And there are about 4,500 real estate agents. And then other issues in terms of this business itself that they have to take care of. Maybe you should explain that a little bit, because it sounds like you're doing more than it appears that you're doing on paper, that it's not just 30 people that you're in charge of.
And clarify, if you could, Mr. Chair. I heard him say 4,500 offices, not 4,500 agents.
20,800.
I think there's about
12,800 agents. So So that
would be
a lot.
Yeah. 20,000.
Can I get in the queue?
20,000, yeah. No, we're just talking. That's what I wanted to do.
This is an open dialogue right now. Right.
Well, the difficulty that I'm trying to figure out is, sure, there are 4,500 real estate offices someplace, and there are 20,000 folks that you test and make sure their professional credentials exist. But in just this far in the presentation, I'm trying to figure out why maybe there couldn't be another model to do that. I'm thinking about the Board of Medical Examiners that is ostensibly, the doctors that ostensibly have a peer-reviewed professional organization with a pretty engaged board that deals with complaints. I'm trying to figure out why, if the function of security is really just a pass-through to the OS, to the state police, why that couldn't be done by a trade association. I'm trying to understand why the seminar piece and the public education piece, the marketplace would deal with that. I see lawyers doing seminars on real estate constantly. I get notices in the mail. And I'm really trying to figure out, is there another model by which this product could be delivered absent a state agency doing it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, that's what I was attempting to allude to with the Alberta model that I suggested, where they do that. I believe, however, it's just not been taken up in the United States at this point. Why has it not? I'd only be speculating.
I'm just trying to figure out how the agency, your agency, might react to direction from the legislature that says explore the Alberta model and actually do some thinking about the future of your agency. I know you've been there for 86 years, but I'm afraid in these very stressed financial times, that might not be adequate rationale to go on in the same model, and I'm just interested in exploring whether or not there's an entirely different model. Testing online, test to 100 online, whether there's just a completely different way of doing business.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, speaking personally for myself, understand that I came out of the real estate industry. That's part of what you have to do my job as a broker for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Having looked at what Alberta is doing and Saskatchewan is doing, I believe now Quebec is looking at it and British Columbia is, I think it's fascinating. It would be a fascinating exercise to go through, and I think it would be interesting to see what the conclusion would be. I'd hate to speculate today what it might be, but you wouldn't get any arguments out of me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for letting me agree.
Senator Morris, and then we'll go to Representative Babakian.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry.
I think
no, no,
I
you go. No, no, you go right ahead.
Go ahead. A question to LFO staff. Have we analyzed these agencies in terms of the licensees as a ratio to FTE and agencies? Because when I look at what we've seen other agencies come through our general government, and I don't think that they have maybe the same kind of ratio that we have here, but I'd just be curious, have we looked at that and created a benchmark kind of internal to Oregon?
Mr. Chair and Senator Morris, we have not done that for this agency. One of the reasons that LFO does not have a recommendation for moving this budget forward today is several of the issues that have been brought up today concerning managerial ratios, staffing ratios to licensees, as well as performance measures and looking at those, and how does this particular agency compare to several of our own licensees, as well as how this agency compares to maybe what the Washington license agency is doing or Idaho's or California's in this region. So don't have that information at this point, but something that we've been asking questions on.
Thank you.
Representative Abaka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Along the lines of what Senator Johnson was asking you, many of these, our boards and commissions are who oversee certain professions. We have them as government bodies for particular reasons. They have these consumer protection pieces to their mission. I do want some, whether you want to call it speculation or based on your years of experience or the fact that you run this agency, I'd like some direction from you as to whether or not you think that your mission is something that should be a government function, or whether or not you think it's something that can be a private function, like some type of a trade association, because I hear you implying both sides of that. So I'd like you to talk about that a little bit more, if you could.
Mr. Chair, Representative Avakian, I'll do my best. Kind of getting a little rarefied air here, but I'll attempt. I am told that the Alberta model for Alberta works very well. As a real estate licensee, I think you have potential here for two ways to do it. If it was a trade organization that did it, trade organizations do a lot of things for a lot of different reasons, some which may or may not be in line with at least what our agency's statutory charge is today. What they have done, and why I say that's interesting to me, is I found it fascinating, and I thought, gee, at some time maybe that's the way to go for the United States jurisdictions too, is if it could be set up to where it is apart from the trade organizations, but apart from the government, and if the what they call a council, and we'd call a commissioner, or whatever we did call it, could be set up to where there's equal public, or not equal necessarily, but significant public representation as well as industry representation, I think it could work. Saskatchewan is interesting because when they first started it, their trade organization and the licensing, they called it a council also, were both under the same executive. And they found that was problematic, and so they have subsequently divided. Did that give you any help?
I think enough for now.
Any other questions of the committee? Why don't we continue forward? And
in the governor's recommended budget, the agency projected another fund-ending balance of 2005-2007 of approximately $1.3 million. The current projected balance is approximately $1.7 million, based on such factors as a longer phase-in of examination services, coupled with a higher-than-projected number of examination applicants, and new licensees and renewing licensees. The balance would cover approximately 7 months of expenditures, which the agency believes is a fiscally prudent reserve. The agency's goal is to maintain an adequate ending balance to meet any unexpected revenue shortfall. As I explained before, the agency's budget is based upon a stable industry environment and number of licensees, but a deviation from any of them could have an impact on revenue. For example, an increase in interest rates could impact the housing market and consequently the number of licensees. The last major fee increase was in the 1997-99 biennium, and we don't plan a fee increase in 2005-07. Regarding vacancies, the agency's two vacancies have been vacant for only a few months, and the agency is undergoing a recruitment for one of those. We're monitoring several bills which affect agency operations, and most do not have a fiscal impact. House Bill 2096 was submitted at the request of the agency, modifies real estate license law provisions regulating real estate licensees and escrow agencies. It's primarily housekeeping and has no fiscal impact. House Bill 2604, among other things, modifies grounds for discipline of licensees and requires progressive discipline. The bill was submitted at the request of the Oregon Association of Realtors. Based on a work group convened by Representative Kitts last Thursday, we expect amendments to be forthcoming, hopefully the stakeholders will not object and there will be no fiscal impact. House Bill 2285 appears to allow the Office of Administrative Hearings to expand the scope of hearings and allows the Administrative Law Judge discovery authority. Again, the amendments appear to be forthcoming, which address the agency's concerns and to appear to alleviate any potential fiscal impact. House Bill 2094 authorizes agencies to offer extended term licenses with terms of 2, 3, 4, or 5 years. Ours are currently 2. Requires adjustment to license fees to prevent loss of revenue. This bill would require certain changes in the agency's licensing processes, including but not limited to revisions to administrative rules and policies. Modifications to agency operations would be minimal and easily completed. The fiscal impact has not yet been determined. House Bill 2843 authorizes the waiver of fees for veterans. The number of licensees who are veterans can't be determined, so we don't know the fiscal impact. In addition, we're monitoring several bills which impact agency rulemaking, contested cases, and budgeting, and those are House Bills 2188, 2204, 2206, 2209, 2384, and 3057. Fiscal impact of those is expected to be minimal. That would conclude my presentation. I'd entertain any other questions you have.
What is your average monthly balance in terms of, I'm looking at your ending balance. What do you, on a monthly basis, maintain?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask Rita to come forward on that. I think she can give it to you better than I can.
Mr. Chair, I look at our balance as a net with a beginning balance and then the net of revenue over expenditures for the month. So I don't have the specific number that you're asking for at this time.
What's the average, though? I mean, the average.
Average revenue through February was $270,000 a month, and the expenditures are usually about $48,000 less than that. We are still implementing our two policy packages, so the averages are going to be a little bit different when we look at those this last quarter.
Okay. So, on average, your monthly revenue is $270,000.
That's through February. Yes, that's
through
correct.
February. And then on average, your monthly expenditures are $48,000.
About $48,000 less than the revenue.
Right, $230,000.
Right.
Okay. So. What I'm trying to find out is what is your average monthly checking account balance?
And I can't answer your question because I don't look at it in that way. I could get back to you with that this afternoon.
Let me tell you where I'm going with this. I'm trying to find out the cash flow of your agency.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'd like to know is the average, and then based on a 24-month period, what is the high? And based on that same 24-month period, what's the low?
Okay.
Okay. And that way, we as a board can look at ending balances, taking into consideration the cash flow of your agency.
Okay.
Have you had any internal audits conducted in the last 24 months?
No, sir. We haven't.
Do we have any other questions from the committee?
No. Mr. Chairman?
Senator Carter.
I've just been carefully listening to the questions that it appears, and it certainly was some very good questions, and looking at other models seems like something that they are not, that is not too foreign to them in terms of some future time. And may I suggest that if we are passing this bill out today, what we can do is give them a budget note to take a long-term look at other models that would fit their situation and be consistent with what other people are talking about on the committee.
What we're going to do, Madam Vice Chair, is hold this up for a day or two.
Okay.
And then I think LFO and I are going to come and speak with you.
Oh, okay.
Walk through there. Okay. Really quick, how many consultants do you folks have on retainer, or how many consultants do you have on contract?
Mr. Chair, I'll ask Betty to respond to that. She knows that answer, I believe.
Mr. Chair, the agency currently uses professional services for the information technology package. That's the primary personal services contract. We're also in the process of contracting with an examination services provider. Those are the two primary ones. In the course of the biennium, there have been some smaller contracts. Okay. Those are the two primary ones that come to mind.
So, do you have any contracts, though, where folks have been on what a professional would call a retainer, where they receive a monthly contract amount?
Oh, I apologize, Representative Smith. None that I know of. However, our maintenance, which is provided by our IT vendor, is paid on a monthly basis.
On your 30 employees, how many? Can you tell me the ratio of how many of those are female, how many are male? While you're looking that up, can you also tell me the number of minorities you folks hire? Or employ, excuse me.
More managers, Senator Johnson.
Explain to me.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't mean to be very flippant, but in an agency of 30 people, how difficult is it to tell me the number of male to female and the number of minorities?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I was just trying to add up people in my head, and I'm prepared with budget questions, but that one I was kind of caught off guard. I am referring back to our affirmative action, and just adding up quickly, I came up with 18 females. So I would have to say, just subtracting it, there would be 12 males. The org chart I could actually look through fairly quickly and tell you as well. In our upper management, we have one minority employee and one disabled employee, and there are no other minorities or disabled in our other categories.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Avakian.
Do you have an affirmative action plan?
It's under, yes.
And
it's under this special report.
And who's in charge of managing your affirmative action plan?
That would be me. As the personnel officer, I serve as the in-house accountant and the budget officer and the personnel officer for our agency because we are small.
And could you briefly describe for us what the plan part of your affirmative action plan is for the upcoming biennium?
Yes, sir. We have any recruitments that we have, I, again, make sure that we recruit in the Asian Reporter, in the Hispanic newspapers as well as contact different organizations to try to get a broad base. We haven't had that many people that would fall in the minority categories that have applied.
Other than the advertising in those papers that you mentioned, any other type of outreach that you do in order to find applicants?
No, sir.
Let me take a step back from that. Do you think that your agency needs to increase its minority population within its ranks?
I would say yes, sir. We make an effort to do so. Again, the people that have applied in the different positions, we don't have them open often, and when we do, we don't have many people. We have had the hire program that I've used as well through the state.
Colleagues, I'm going to ask this question of this committee. I'm feeling a little uncomfortable with this agency's budget, and I guess I would turn to to the members to find out how they would like to have their chair proceed forward. Would you like us to, I guess I'm throwing this open, how would you like us to proceed, Senator Johnson?
Well, I'll wade into the water, Mr. Chair. I feel not only uncomfortable with the budget, but frankly uncomfortable with the agency. I haven't heard anything that suggests any innovative suggestions to the legislature to look at the structure of your advisory committee or look at the structure of the agency. And I would very much like to try the idea out on the other members of the panel that at a minimum we have a budget note asking for a very thoughtful review with an appropriate panel of stakeholders and other interested parties to look at an entirely different model to discharge this function. I think this would be an opportunity to demonstrate that there's a certain responsiveness in this building to different and better ways of doing business. And I think that there might be ample opportunity here with all the appropriate stakeholders at the table to design that new model and roll it out for the benefit of Oregonians.
Any other comments?
I certainly agree. I think that it would be an ideal time to do that. I think that does take a little bit of time, so it's not the kind of thing we want to just jump into for the next biennium, but certainly it would be appropriate to look seriously at evaluating this model for the 0709 biennium.
Okay.
Keeping in mind, I think, Mr. Chair, if you'll allow me, there's a consumer protection element here, and I certainly think we don't want to abandon that, but I think that there is a nimbler delivery mechanism that assures consumers of a level of oversight and protection that comes in a different model.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's quite likely that we will be advancing, and I would characterize it a very thoughtful staffing reform bill based on the work that we're doing with LFO and the agencies. And certainly this agency, I think, would be a candidate for inclusion in that process. And so I'm looking forward to, I think, some very productive work that we'll be bringing forward to the full committee.
Well, why don't we...
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Could I comment just a minute?
Please.
I want to thank Senator Johnson for suggesting that kind of thing gets my creative juices going, and I really appreciate your mentioning that. I do know my counterpart in Alberta and Saskatchewan quite well, actually, and have found the system that they use to be fascinating, and have often wondered whether or not it was something that couldn't be utilized in the United States. So if you so choose to add that sort of a thing, it will be approached, at least by me, with a great deal of enthusiasm.
Well, please understand, part of the reason we're bringing this forward is because there's an element of frustration among this committee towards the information that was brought forward to us. And so I think we're going to need to work through that here in the coming days, coming weeks, along with taking into consideration what Senator Johnson mentioned.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Vaki and then Senator Johnson.
And prior to this process that might take a couple of years in taking a look at what the nature of your agency really is, I have a concern about the way that your board is being used. And certainly this is a board appointed by the governor, and you answer to that branch of government, but I would certainly think that one of the primary functions of that board would be to be not only informed but approving of your budget. And the fact that you're before us now without having gone through that process with your board concerns me, and I would think that you would want to spend some time with the governor's staff and see, check whether or not, at least my impression, and I'm thinking that maybe this committee's impression was the same, whether that really should be one of the primary functions of your board. I think it would be nice if you come back before us again concerning this biennium, not what you may become in the next biennium, that we have some input from your board members or at least some reflection from you on that discussion that you will have with them regarding the budget, not just the testing or examination or ethics.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Actually, that's a perfect tee-up for what I was going to say. This is an opportunity, I think, to engage the 20,000 professional realtors in this state in some kind of meaningful input. The board, I would hope, is a reflection of that constituency. This is a chance to start with a blank piece of paper and actually demonstrate to Oregonians that this building is responsible, that a whole industry segment is responsible, and that when presented with the opportunity to find a faster, better, nimbler way to deliver services, we're there to take a serious look at it. I think the challenge for you is going to make sure that you have all of your stakeholders engaged in some meaningful way, because what we're really talking about here is a new model for doing business. And I think probably the consensus of this panel, and I beg your correction quickly if I'm putting words in someone's mouth, is a real enthusiasm to look to you as a professional in your industry and the person who's guided this agency for 10 years to say there's got to be a better way to do this, to get the same level of consumer protection, the same level of comfort to the public that people they're interacting with are watched in some professional capacity, but to be responsive to the industry in figuring out just a faster, better, smarter way of doing the work that you're doing up to this point.
Sure. Well, with that, unless there's objection, we're going to close the public hearing, and tomorrow we will have the veterans folks before us. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Can she turn it back?
Oh, we need to put something back on record really quick. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I forgot to do my job, and my job was to say that the co-chair of Ways and Means has Senator Verger working on Connect Oregon, so she's on legislative business at this time.
And so we will have her excused for legislative business.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Yes.